Okay, we're on page 39. Chapter 1, Self-Love and Its Consequences. You know, it's very much like the fall. Wouldn't think of it because it's our understanding, at least, our Orthodox understanding, is that there were consequences to the fall of the first parents. And the consequences, there's the confusion of the mind of the nous, we should say, and our inability to function clearly as the spiritual and physical beings that we were created to be. There are a lot of consequences. Another one of the main consequences of the fall is the coming of death into the world. It's a consequence of the fall. So when it comes to sin, when it comes to the fall, or when it comes to self-love, the real issue is dealing with the consequences. The Western idea was that the fall was breaking God's law. And there's a idea of a legal relationship to God, and since the law was broken, then there had to be punishment, and Adam and Eve's punishment was being cast out of the garden, and death, and all those other things. So there wasn't so much the actual consequences of something happening that changed the world. It's more God's punishment, his choice, his decision to punish. Now, he had warned them, according to that understanding. Our understanding is he had warned them because there were going to be inevitable consequences. And so it's kind of a similar thing here. There are consequences to self-love. And the first thing St. Paisios points out fits in very well with that. Self-love is to do the will of the old man, the fallen Adam, to do the will of the old man. To love the old man within, and I've even heard people say that they do express an affection, a love for the old Adam, and wanting to preserve his life, not wanting to give up the life of the old Adam, that really they're conscious of the fact that they are in love with that fallen way of life, and that they don't want the old man to die, that that's who they think of themselves as actually being. They identify themselves with the fallenness of the old Adam. And Elder Paisios, St. Paisios, is saying that all of the vices that we struggle against, gluttony, egoism, obstinacy, envy, all of them have as their source self-love. One person seeks to accommodate only himself out of self-love, without any regard for others. Another makes very specific and particular arrangements for his food, his sleep, his or her worldly security, so that nothing disturbs his well-being. You know, as it says in Scripture, you have plenty laid up for the future. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Don't worry about anything because you have provided for yourself and you are trusting in all those things. Another person desires to be taken into account by others, to be held in esteem, and if they are slighted, even in the very least, if they don't get their way in the small things, they react badly, and they think, why aren't they taking me into consideration? I'll show them, and then they're able to do something not nice to other people, so that they get noticed, So, anybody have difficulty identifying with this kind of behavior, this way of thinking?
I see it in others all the time.
It is unfortunate. The world divides into others and myself. And all of us become an exception to ourselves because we can't. And who is it that we can't see? We can't see. Actually, we can't see anybody because there isn't that isn't all that others amount to. We can't see ourselves. That's the thing. The self-knowledge. Do you know yourself? Our last book, remember. Page 40. Our will contains ourself within it. It all comes down to will. It's our will that keeps our self-love alive. Whoever doesn't investigate whether that which comforts him also comforts someone else will in the end be found to have been directed by the devil. In other words, if the things that comfort us don't comfort others, but only us, in separation from others, that's a sign that we're guided by the same thing that inspires the devil. So I guess my freedom ends where your nose begins doesn't fit into this. Would you think?
No.
It's curious.
I'm not sure what you mean, Father.
Well, how could that possibly fit together with this idea that whoever doesn't investigate, that which comforts him also comforts someone else? The idea is that we cannot cut ourselves off from others in such a way that we can say, you have your freedom up to the point that it offends me, I have my freedom up to the point that it offends you, you are you and I am me, and we just avoid meeting in the middle aggressively. Other than that, we are free individuals, free of one another. This is an assertion that is not true.
Right.
That's how. Page 40, hyphen number 3, second line. If one places his self in all the things he wants, can he also have room for Christ? And now there's an idea here of we can invest what we identify with as ourself in different things. We can invest ourselves, as was set up here earlier. We can put a kind of brake on how we invest ourselves. We don't want to identify with just the things that we want, you know. If being who I am is all about what I want, you know, and I'll leave you free to identify yourself on the basis of all you want. And we may want different things, so we'll be liberal about that. I don't want to impose anything on you and say, well, you shouldn't want those things aren't good to want. This is our kind of American way of granting absolute freedom to others to be individuals on the basis of my being a separate individual. My freedom ends where your nose begins, you know, so live and let live. Everybody is identified by their desires, by their wants, you know. But this here is a completely different idea. This idea is that you do not identify yourself by identifying with your wants. If one places his self in all the things he wants, is there any room for Christ? It's a question.
I find that struggle, no, I think it's no, because I see it during Great Lent. I mean, I want so many things. I want simply different foods. Obviously, that's not the goal. That's not what we're doing.
It's exactly what we stand up against when we begin Great Lent.
Right.
We initiate a spiritual struggle exactly by denying ourselves a way of life where what we want is how we decide what we're going to do. You know, what do I want now? There's another book we read, I think it was Abba Moses, was saying you shouldn't always think about what you are going to eat. We have so much that we get tired of just the same old wonderful delicacies, and we just think, isn't there anything that I had? This happens to me after Pascha. Oh, I haven't eaten this yet. I haven't eaten that yet. What do I want? And it's almost like Great Lent and Holy Week are so terrific because when you're finished and it's Pascha, all of a sudden you want everything. And you hadn't, you know, and during Lent you hadn't wanted, you hadn't cared about it. It didn't matter whether you ate a piece of cardboard or another shrimp, you know, I mean, who cares? What difference does it make? But after Pascha, you're wanting all these things that you haven't wanted for a long, long time. It's great. It almost makes the whole thing worthwhile, you know.
Almost. All at once.
Yeah. So, but this is, if this is how we end up after Pascha, it's really terrible. It's really ironic because now we're driven by desires in a way that we weren't before we started at the beginning of Lent. So that's a kind of a sad. It's a new struggle, you know. It's a new struggle, different kind of struggle. It's the reason that I remember one of my early insights into. I had a number of boom, boom, boom insights into Orthodoxy once I got to seminary, and one of them was keeping. The feast is more difficult than keeping the fast. Mm-hmm. It's easier to fast than it is after Pascha to keep Pascha, and not to just fall right back in to all those passions and desires in a way that is even more devoted to passions and desires than you were before you started out and struggled against them. So keeping the feast, I think, is more difficult than keeping the fast. But the Elder Paisios, St. Paisios, sees a real direct opposition between having room for Christ and being filled up in yourself with your desires, where your needs have been, are no longer needs, they're desires, you know, that all of your desires have become things that you think you need. We're supposed to learn from Lent that that's not true, but there's an opposition between these things. If we're full of passions and desires, there's no room for Christ. That's why we chip away at our passions and desires, to try to make room where there was no room. And then his advice is this, very clear point of guidance. If a person throws away his own self, imagine, throws away his own self, God will give him everything. This is the incredible thing, that we really have no need for this self-conscious ego, the old man that we think is who we are. It's not who we are. It's an illusion that is kind of a function of our passions and desires. And Elder Paisios is saying, you can throw it away. Do you have less than you did before? You don't. Because God has created us. We haven't created ourselves by way of our passions and desires. So if we throw away the old man, completely get rid of the old man, we will still be, in fact, will be more clearly the persons that God created us to be, and now we'll be able to be functional. But in our passions and desires, we're convinced that we don't want the old man to die, because that's what we love. We're in love with our passions and desires. Later on, he points out as a particular problem that we can come to love our passions and desires. Garanda, when you speak to us about throwing away the self, I fear that I will not endure, because isn't that who I am? Isn't that the end of my life? Well, oh my, just what is going on with you? It is as if you are saying, if I throw away the passions, then what will I have? When I say to throw away the self, I mean to throw away our passions. Bottom of the page. You don't need physical strength for divesting yourself of the old man within. All you need is humility. So it's a choice of humility or pride. When we're talking about the devil, we're talking about pride. Pride is what the devil is all about. He seduces us with pride. And if we are living our life according to our passions and desires, we are living in a way that pleases him and displeases Christ God. Top of page 41. Self-love is also the desire to eat or rest more than necessary. Normally, we should give our body only what it needs. Desire is one thing, need is quite another. Suppose I have before me two types of food, equally nutritious, but one of them is tastier than the other. If I choose the tastier one, then my action is one of self-love. But if I prefer to eat the tastier food for health reasons, then my action is one of discernment. So, is the standard, does my body need it, or is it just tastier? Does it please my desires? If it pleases my desires, it's self-love. But we want to try to show discernment. Third sentence down. If a person limits his intake, he can easily practice self-control. Otherwise, he will become a slave to his stomach, which will then require being full. This is how it works. I know from personal experience. An extremely overweight person has such a large capacity for food, he'll have to eat half a calf in order to feel full and then drink 2 gallons of water as well. Yep, sad but true. Also sadly, it also applies to other vices. If we have developed what we believe is a need for recognition or almost anything you can think of that we can develop, that we have a desire for, we have a greater capacity. And that capacity becomes more and more difficult to fill. We have to have more and more recognition, more and more of whatever it happens to be. It applies to many desires that we fall in love with and become vices for us. It doesn't just apply to food and to those of us who, like myself, are gluttonous.
At times.
Oh, I think on a regular basis. Yeah, yeah. Some opportunities are better than others, but no, it's always there.
Well, one season Friday, just give us a chance to at least hold our head up for a little bit.
We were talking last week about how, for those of us who have this weakness, if we don't have the opportunity to consume vastly more than is necessary, why bother? This is a gluttonous attitude, you know. Who wants, it's incredible, we were saying the other week, how little the body actually needs. Not anywhere near enough, you know, to satisfy desire. Not anywhere near enough. And I think it applies, as I say, not just to gluttony, but to other vicious weaknesses. You know, vice and vicious. Vicious is, the root word for vicious is vice. So other vicious passions. Second sentence, top of page 42. Oh, well, I don't know. We didn't need to beat up on ourselves as parents. You know, some people do. You do run into this oftentimes, especially convert families, people who have been recently converts. Nowadays, people think in a worldly way. Don't let the children fast because they might get sick. It might not be healthy. Don't let the children be deprived of anything. And children end up being miserable, constantly wanting more and more and more of one thing or another, and wanting to eat steaks all the time, you know, and not beans and boring things that we eat during Lent. And the idea of only eating what the body needs, we teach our children the opposite. When one gladly resists eating out of love for Christ, then he is indeed well nourished. Well, I should have to tattoo this on, you know, somewhere on my body. I don't know. That's so much at variance for the way I eat, for sure. The bottom of this page, four sentences up, is a kind of a summary of this section, really. Whoever loves his own self more than others does not live in accordance with the spirit of the gospel. If Christ himself had thought only of his own self, he would have stayed in heaven. He would not have come to earth to suffer, be crucified in order to save us, and he expects us to take up our cross and to kill the old man. So anything less is really not the Christian faith. It's some accommodation of some principles that are selectively chosen from the New Testament, those that fit. It's kind of like the banner for the New York Times, famous banner, is all the news that's fit to print. And this kind of selective Christianity is all the Christianity that fits, all the Christianity that fits with our basically secular worldview. That's not Christianity. C.S. Lewis called it Christianity and water, Christianity on the rocks, mostly water. In our society, the spirit of sacrifice does not exist. Any comments, observations, expressions of complete outrage?
Well, you know, just reading this, pretty easy to read.
It is. Hardly requires discussion.
Well, yes, but if I hold myself up to the light of, you know, look in the mirror and say, well, am I planning to do anything about this? Because this calls for a pretty deep and pervasive level of repentance. You want to have that, for me at least, I'm always asking myself, what do I want to do next? What do I have, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I did have the benefit of a mother who said, here's breakfast. She didn't ask us what we wanted. She gave us breakfast. Whatever it was there, it was what we got. And for lunch and supper, it's time for supper, and we came, and whatever it was, that was what supper was. Not, what would you like to have? So I didn't have that. But then I guess when I got older and I had my own money, oh, I get to pick whatever. So maybe it had the opposite effect, that now I, you know, pick the delicacies or whatever. But that's I don't know, Father Jacob, maybe you have some wisdom for us how to struggle in this area.
But you did select Tacoma to live in, so we don't have too many.
Our choices are so limited.
Living in Tacoma represents a form of self-denial.
Yeah, well, in terms of restaurant choices, I think he's
that's true.
Mexican or Chinese, but that's, you know.
Yeah.
It's just not food, though. There's a lot of other things that are desires that we don't need, but we want. So you can, food may be an easy one for us fatties, but there's a lot of other things that we don't need, but yet we want.
Yeah, we confuse our wants with our needs.
Right.
Well, and our whole world is set up so that we can have whatever we need really, really easily.
Well, our little part of it is.
Well, that's
our world. I mean our world. I don't mean...
That's the power of advertising. That's what they're all about. They used to call it propaganda, but now we call it advertising. Sounds nicer.
Yes.
But it is. That's what it is. Trying to lure you into,
buying things you don't want, don't need, can't afford.
This medicine is better than that medicine. Let's take that medicine. We may not need it.
And I think that trying to get you to define yourself on the basis of your desires, exactly.
Uh-huh.
And in any color you want, in any configuration, because we want to be open to everybody. We don't want to leave anybody out. We want to make sure that everybody is served and that every conceivable desire has its opportunity to contribute to the overall ultimate consumption of as much as possible when we're all taken together. There's gross national consumption, something like that. It is kind of gross.
One of the biggest things is that's been a problem for me though my whole life is leisure and relaxation and stuff. It's like,
oh, you mean television?
Yeah, but any kind of leisure or relaxation, entertainment of some kind or another, something that...
Diversion.
Yeah, it's always.
You brought it up a while, Bob. What are we being diverted from? What do we want a break from? Reality.
Right. Lots of times it is from reality.
We're recognizing our emptiness. It came up the other week in terms of, we were talking about the different vices, and I brought a book in that was a kind of a catalog of vices and their opposing virtues. And one of the things that was pointed out in there is that there is one vice that does not have an opposing virtue, nor does it need any reason for existing, and that is acedia. Acedia is...
doldrums or the despondency.
Yeah, despondency. The blues. Why am I blue? Why am I... You're never going to get an answer to that question. Because there is no reason. It doesn't need a reason. And there is no specific virtue that you can use to oppose it. So it makes it especially difficult to deal with. And the reason I bring it up now is because the thing that we are warned against is taking refuge in diversion. So why are we diverting ourselves? Ennui, boredom, acedia, the emptiness of a life devoted to oneself, which is without God, a zero, basically. There's nothing there. If we're serving our own desires, nothing higher. The great secret is we're dumping everything into a black, all-consuming hole, and we want to avoid recognizing that. So that's the worst scenario I think that I can, come up with. Why do we do this? To avoid recognizing that. And then the only alternative to darkness is light. The only alternative to death is life. The only alternative to self-love is love of God, love of Christ, love of others. But that's exactly what we in our self-love want to avoid, like the plague, the death of the old Adam. So we have a lot of reasons to turn to
diversion.
Sounds like something that would come out of doubt.
And hey! Diversion is so profitable for us and for others. So as long as we can keep the ball rolling,
Benjamin mentioned despair a while ago. Is despair and despondency similar sort of thing?
I think there is a distinction that was made, if I remember, between despondency and despair. I'm not sure. I don't have my book with me. I decided perversely not to bring it.
It's not.
I think I despair is when you feel like
that.
You have no hope for
yeah.
doing
I'm
forever.
Hope is the opposite of that.
Of something, but despondency is it's like, why bother?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, I think so. It's like an inner darkness and inner death.
I think despondency would lead more quickly to suicide than
or we are getting
than
darkness
despair would necessarily.
Well, there's joy. There are things that are joyful. The thing that was warned against last week in the book that I had brought was for a monk, stay in your cell, confront the acedia, you know, deal with it, you know, which isn't easy, but a monk, after all, that's what you're supposed to do. But what monks will be tempted to do will be to go visit other monks, you know, shoot the monastic breeze a little bit, you know, a little bit of consolation.
Let's discuss that.
Monks do that
Let's
too.
Let's discuss
a little
this
theology, world. Maybe.
Yeah.
Shoot the monastic breeze.
Yeah. And that's what you're not, so hence the advice, stay in your cell, you know, be true to your vocation.
And they're finding their life much easier to live than we are.
Well, they're there to struggle. There
well,
to
not
struggle.
Necessarily easier. I mean,
what do you
they
mean?
Have, they, have the fat, they do all a lot more fasting and a lot more, you know, putting up with cold and uncomfortable situations.
To us, those are discomforts. To them, in many cases, they must find pleasure in that because they're doing it for God. Well, that's my thinking.
And there are some monks that take vows of to not talk to anybody else.
Yes, that's true.
You know, when we were in...
But you deal with the consequences.
Yeah, we were in Greece.
That's why they do it.
There were people who burrowed into the side of the hill, remember? And lived there.
Yeah. Monastics.
Mm-hmm.
Meteora.
Yeah.
Did you go to Meteora coming down?
I did not.
Meteora,
we didn't get to go over there. But I don't think they do it because it's fun and games. I think it's hard.
And they know that, but this is the way they want to live. And to me, I think they're living for God and praying for all of us.
Well, sure. Sure.
I hope so. Somebody's got to pray for them.
Yeah, I mean... Mm-hmm. And then, of course, some of them get... I've observed... In this country, some people order to join the monastic life in later life because there's no place else to go. That's my impression of some decisions
well,
they,
and
made.
That statement could mean different things. If I've spent my life, professional life, and I've been diverted thus far,
mm-hmm.
I run out of diversions,
mm-hmm.
there's no place else to go. That kind of, you know, there's no place else to go, means that you've run out of excuses, more or less. And then
excuses,
and then getting older,
versions.
That puts a fine point on things as well. You know, my point of view on these things is different now than it was when I was 40 or 50 or even 60.
I have heard or read or maybe heard from Herman that's kind of, not just this country, that's sort of a traditional thing for old, especially old rich people to do in the old times in Greece and countries. You know, their wife dies, they're old,
right.
They give all their money to the monastics and then to the monastery, and they become a monastic and live out their days.
Sure.
It's kind of a...
Well, what else are you going to do with those all-important,
golden
years?
But it's different than a young man or woman,
the sacrifice seems to be much greater, doesn't it?
Chose to spend their time in
for
prayer.
A young person.
And atonement, you know.
As someone who has a lifetime calling to monasticism.
Yes.
But, you know, whereas the other kind of person we're talking about, an older person, you know, who does that, they are responding, I think, to our human calling. Mm-hmm. You know, not necessarily specifically called to have lived their whole life that way, but in the final analysis, spiritual life for those of us who don't have a lifetime monastic calling is not different. The content of spiritual life is the same for a monastic as it is for those of us who live in the world. It's, you know, I think that's one of the things that's, you know, significant about Orthodox Christianity, that we learn about the realities of spiritual life from monastics, because they've right. spent their whole life in this struggle. But when it comes right down to it, once we've run out of excuses and diversions will no longer help, we are going to end up dealing with exactly the same realities that they've spent their whole lives dealing with. Otherwise, why would we be reading a book like this? It's spiritual insight that applies to us as well. It's practical insight and understanding that can at least give us pause, even though we live lives that are devoted to functioning in a world that believes in life according to the passions and desires, that believes that that is the pursuit of happiness, which it's not. You know. Declaration of Independence doesn't identify happiness, you know.
No.
Just.
What's the saying? Getting and becoming, we lay waste our powers.
They want more and more and more.
Well, which is not going to lead to happiness. I mean, if you're on that treadmill, your chances for happiness are probably not so hot. Okay, last paragraph on page 44, just about the center, St. Paul. St. Paul says, "Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth." And this is not advice for highwaymen. You know, this is this is something else. Spiritual life is based entirely on this: to forget my own self in the good sense, and to consider the other person, to give them spiritual wealth, to share his pain, to feel his difficulties, so that the others aren't alone. At the end of this section, there's a description of hell. And you know, the description of hell, and first the description of hell, and then the description of heaven. And the description of hell that Lucretius gives is the image of a place where all of the people there are gathered around a central reservoir of food, and they all have long spoons, and you know, spoons so long that although they can all dig into the food that's in the middle, the spoons are too long for them to feed themselves. And this is hell. This is hell. Food is there. You've got the spoon. You're hungry, but you cannot get it, you know, food. And heaven is a place where, same deal, only each person is feeding another person. And they feed one another. So, nice. Spiritual life is based entirely on this, to forget my own self in the good sense. And he says in the good sense, because there's a bad sense about forgetting yourself. We are free and spiritually responsible beings. Mm-hmm. We need to do what needs to be done. So that's in the good sense, spiritual. Life is based entirely on this, to forget my own self in the good sense, and to consider the other person, to share in his pain, feel his difficulties, to see how I can help the other, how I can comfort him. Top of 45, second hyphen. Put yourself in the other's place, then you will understand what comforts him. So you can't do that without orienting yourself from yourself toward others. But if you keep yourself
closed up in your own shell,
yeah, you don't put yourself
right in this place. If you keep yourself closed up in your own shell, how can you ever understand what comforts others? In our time, most people look to see how they can take over another's place for themselves, and not how to put themselves in another place in order to understand him. No profit in that. Ah, but there is a spiritual profit. So, let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. Isn't that interesting how that could be viciously misunderstood?
Viciously.
Bottom of 45, many people see, last four lines, many people see how others trouble them and not how they trouble others. They only have expectations of others, not of themselves. The logic of spiritual life is to examine how we ourselves trouble others and not how others trouble us. To observe what comforts the other and not what comforts us. Page 47. Middle of the page. Self-love deprives us of peace and joy. and maybe gives us over to this condition of acedia when we run out of diversions. Yeronda, why am I not always at peace?
It's Yeronda.
What is it?
Yeronda.
Say it again.
Yeronda.
Yeronda. Yeronda?
Yeronda.
Old man.
Okay. Yeronda. That's all it means? Yeronda?
That's what it means.
Old not old grandpa. Man. I thought it meant grandpa.
I imagined it.
Or elder. Wise well, man. Elder. Yeah, you know, elder. So wise. Elder would fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, elder, I'm sure, is what they have in mind. Yeah.
Yeronda and Yerondisa for the women, the nuns.
Yerondisa.
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 No, Yerondisa. Yeronda.
That must be Spanish or something.
You'll start somebody if you said that Yeronda while you're saying, you know, Yeronda, where'd you get the Y?
Okay. Well, thank you. You have not been liberated from your own self. You are still enslaved to the old man within you. If you don't get rid of yourself will get rid of you. So we are enemies, myself and I.
That's interesting.
If myself is devoted to passions and desires and I identify with it, it is very much like the enemy.
You're in bed with the enemy.
Which, yes, exactly, yeah. Whoever maintains self-love cannot find consolation and peace of soul because he is not inwardly free. That's pretty stark. Page 48, second hyphen, third line. I reorganized this sentence in the following way in order to make it into a recommendation. Pressure the old man within with, now you, how do you pronounce that?
Philotimo.
Philotimo.
That sense we've been doing pretty the right good thing. Philotimo is very important among
yes,
Jews.
I know. Yes,
doing the right thing.
We've spent a long time on philotimo. Okay. Pressure the old man within with philotimo. If we do not, he will eventually blow up our spiritual constitution. Rigorous advice. But if we do not pressure the old man with philotimo, he will eventually blow up our spiritual constitution. So there's kind of no choice about these things. We think we have a choice. Well, the old man, not so bad. Kind of have an affection for the passions and desires. They're the things that comfort me after all. I need a lot of distraction. And as a matter of fact, we're talking about life and death here. Okay, bottom of the page. Whoever does what is good rejoices, for he is rewarded with divine consolation. Whoever does what is evil suffers, turning his earthly paradise into an earthly hell. Do you have love and goodwill? Then you are an angel. You're angelic. And wherever you go or stand, you bring paradise with you, as the saints do. Do you have passions and evil will? Then you have the devil within you. And wherever you go or stand, you bring hell with you. It is from this earthly life that we begin living in either paradise or hell. Okay. That's probably it.
That's, that would be the problem with becoming monastic person in your old age.
You're going to have to confront all of that crap from the first however many decades.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not confronting stuff that I did when I was 10, 9, and 8, and 16.
I mean, if you've been a worldly 18? Person your whole life, and then all of a sudden you're getting old, and you think, oh, well.
Monastery for me.
Yeah, it's the monastery for me.
That's a question of atonement the rest of your days that you have. How many days you have.
Could be pretty rough.
Well, still, it could be that, you know, how are you going to atone for that because you don't have any
desire. Well, you don't have to atone. You just have to confront the reality and mm-hmm. that.
The first sentence I'm having from
first sentence.
Whoever does what is good rejoices, for he is rewarded with divine consolation.
Right.
I thought we did good because it was the right thing to do and because we want to, not because,
we love God. Right.
Yeah.
Well, he's not talking about the reason that we do what's good. He's talking about the effect.
Consequences.
He's saying, and I know from reading St. Vicious, he never says we should do something so that we will get something in return, ever. He himself says, you know, we should pray that others go into heaven, even if we ourselves don't.
But he rejoices, is what he says here.
He's saying that will be the result of it.
The consequences.
The consequences of those who seek other people
self.
I'm sorry, Father.
Yeah, no, go ahead. You're doing
good. Those who seek for other people's good will in themselves find joy,
From doing it.
If we seek our own joy, we end up being set. It's the same thing that Christ said, that he who will be first will be last, he who is last will be first. I think it's the same sort of reality that he's describing, or harmonic of it, maybe. Is that a good way to say it?
The thing is, if you're doing good because it's the quote right thing to do, you may not rejoice.
Right.
Because you're just kind of doing it because it's the rule, following the rule.
Mm.
But what he's talking about is doing good for the love of Christ, for the love of God, because you're contradicting your own passions and desires and living as we ought to live as human beings, as Christ lives, being concerned about the other person, consoling them, being concerned about what consoles them. All of those things are things that amount to doing good from Elder Paisios's point of view. Self-love has its consequences, and contradicting self-love and doing good, it has its consequences too. And the consequence of throwing yourself away, yourself away, are that you will rejoice.
You get rewarded.
Yeah, exactly.
For divine consolation.
Exactly.
And what comes to mind is the opposite of what we're talking about, as far as when you said at the beginning. We talked about self-love being like a monster. We can't get enough. Whatever it is we're looking for, we want more and more and more. And that would be the opposite to me, that when we do good and we're thinking of others and trying to help others. Some things I've experienced a little bit of this.
Sure.
I think everybody tries to, I just have this inner rejoicing happens. But then when I'm doing self-loving things, you want and want and want, and there's never that satisfaction. There's never that
joy.
Mm-hmm. I think there's more joy in giving than in taking.
Mm-hmm. So if you do good for recognition, it doesn't count.
No.
Because
right.
It's not good. Mm-hmm. It's actually not good.
Yeah, we can ruin in doing good things. Doing something good and then resenting that other people aren't helping you do it, other people should be. I'm always the one doing this. I wish somebody else would be. Every now and then. We can just completely ruin it. Probably better not to do it. I've done that myself a lot of times. Use it as a way to judge other people.
Okay, it's 1:30, and traditionally that's when we stop, 7:30. So, next time, chapter 2, page 50, Freedom from the Slavery of Self-Love. Thanks.